You're listening to the Reading Envy podcast, where I'll have what you're reading. Hi, everyone. This is Jenny. Welcome back to the Reading Envy podcast. I'm here today with a repeat guest. It's Courtney. Welcome back, Courtney.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
So nice to have you. And I wanted to say before we get started that there will be a book today that we're going to talk about that has some content warnings attached to it. It's going to be the fourth book. And so you can fast forward when you get to it. It's rape, child abuse, sexual assault, grooming, all the bad stuff. So just to give you a heads up, but that won't be for a while. So you're one of the people that submitted something for the reading goals episode at the beginning of 2021, where different people shared what their reading goals were for the year. So I thought it would be fun if we could check in with you and see how it's going. It's almost halfway through the year.
Yeah. So I have about four or five reading goals this year, and I didn't mention all of them in that podcast episode. So like many, many readers, I have a giant stack of books at home that I need to read, and yet I keep going to the library. And so one of my goals this year was to try to read one book for every one library book I own. Plot twist, it's not going well. But I figured, you know, maybe at one point I can just stop going to the library and just try to catch up. And then one of the books I'm actually talking about today is one of my own. So there's a positive.
Oh, yeah.
I want to read one nonfiction mighty tome. I'm thinking either, well, actually, I'll probably read The Gene by Siddhartha Mukherjee. He wrote The Emperor of All Maladies, a biography of cancer. And I read that a few years ago. And that is also a nonfiction mighty tome. And then I want to read 40 books and then four memoir biographies. I'm at three for the year, one of which I'll talk about today. But the ones I've read so far are about a woman who worked as like a CIA analyst. Can't remember the name. It's by Nadia something. It's like The Targeter by Nadia. Insert last name here. And then Unbowed by Wangari Mahati, which is what I'll be talking about today. And then I read The Girl 13 Names by Hyun Seo Lee, which is about a defector from North Korea. And then there is a subreddit called Fantasy, and they have a book bingo that comes out every April. And I would like to do the book bingo. And for those who don't know, Reddit is a website where there are tons and tons and tons of subreddits, and these subreddits are like literally anything. There's one called Bread Stapled to Trees. And so one of the subreddits I like to visit on there is Fantasy, and they oftentimes have a nice, like they'll have authors come along to chat with, and they have the book bingo, and they have like giant massive lists of woman authors. LGBTQIA+, old, very old fantasy books, and just all kinds of lists.
Do you have to have an account in Reddit to access all that content?
No, you don't. If you want to comment or like upvote or downvote, aka like or dislike, you'll need an account. But other than that, you can just head on over. If you do just want to look at the fantasy part, I would just go to Google and go to reddit.com r/fantasy or r/fantasy, and it'll take you to the subreddit. There's all kinds of ones. There's a generic one for books, but then there's one for historical fiction. One that's literally just pictures of people's bookshelves. If you like a particular series and you want to connect with others like Kingkiller Chronicles or Harry Potter, there's those subreddits. There's book clubs on there. It's a very large reading network.
Wow. I just never really thought about using Reddit for reading. So I appreciate that.
Yeah. I found a lot of good books on there. There's one for Suggest Me a Book. There's one for What's That Book? So if you can't remember a book you read when you're like 12, you can just go to What's That Book? And a lot of times people will find what you're looking for.
Ooh, suggest me a book would be good practice. I like that. That's fun.
Yeah, I've used it a few times.
So tell me a little bit more about Book Bingo. Does it just happen for a month, or is it like all year round, or what does that look like?
It's year round. They release a new one every April 1st. So that goal of mine will overlap a little bit into 2022. And it's just, I think it's 5x5. And they have five different little topics. Like this year is, there's one called science fiction, fantasy, nonfiction related. So like you could read biography of someone who wrote like J.R.R. Tolkien, for instance. They have one that's set in Asia. And so they do try to do a lot of like, kind of like what Book Riot does, trying to get you to pick up books you would never read. But then sometimes it's just very simple, like read a collection of short stories or read a book that features a big, dumb object.
So then, of course, since it's Reddit, are there threads of like book ideas for each square?
Oh, yeah. So they publish the square each year on the first. Side note, they also publish usually an April Fool's square. So like one year it was like Australian themed. One year it was Canada themed, and be ridiculous stuff like features maple syrup on the cover, or, you know, a character goes to Tim Hortons or other like Canadian-esque stuff.
That's fun.
Yeah. So there's threads. They have a big list of book suggestions, and then people are constantly reviewing their own books and then saying, okay, I read X, Y, and Z. Here's the squares it can fit for. And there's also a hard mode, which is where it's like read a book set at a school. And then hard mode would be can't be King Killer Chronicles or can't be Harry Potter.
Mm. That's smart.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have to just get a row, or do you have to do the whole square?
For the actual bingo, you could do just a row. To get like special flair and to be entered, I think, into a drawing, you have to do the whole bingo card.
Mm.
I can't remember. One year, someone did the whole bingo card, but then they also tried their hardest to do the April Fool's bingo card, too. I think they tried the Australian one. It's pretty good.
I mean, I bet there's a book where someone goes to Tim Hortons.
Oh, I'm sure there's a book, a Canadian book, where someone goes to Tim Hortons. There's more than just books on there. It's mostly books, but people share their art.
Oh, yeah. And that's some, cool.
I posted a review of Final Fantasy 15, the video game, on there.
Mm-hmm.
Any really fantasy related media, it's just mostly books, is on this art fantasy.
I think when the Sword and Laser discussed the House in the Cerulean Sea, we had found some fan art there too for that, which was really fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of really cool stuff there.
Well, it sounds like you're doing pretty good for your goals. I mean, yeah. three out of four memoirs or biographies. Mm-hmm. And how many of your own books do you think you've read?
Oh, not many. Not many. Maybe like 10.
Yeah.
And that's a big maybe.
Do you think it's because of the deadlines at the library, or that you can get new books at the library?
It's both. And what happens, especially since our library, you can go in now if you are wearing a mask.
Oh, good.
If I get in a shopping mood, which isn't very often, I'm not really a shopper, but if I'm in a shopping mood and when I get to the library, I'll just start grabbing things. And it's like, I want this and I want this and I want this, which it's actually pretty nice, because a lot of times I'll pick up books I never would normally pick up, especially never buy. And then I usually quite enjoy them.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
And it's like free, shopping for free.
It's pretty much shopping. If I don't like it, well, I can just return it.
Yep.
How are you coming along in your goals?
I think some better than others. Mm. I've made really good progress on my reading Europe, which is the big goal. I've only read one title that counts for my music goal.
Mm.
Although I did read another book the other day that had music in it, so I guess I could count it, but it wasn't really part of my original goal. I have this authors to try list that I wanted to read more. And I think I've read two from that list this year, which isn't great, but at least it's progress. And then keep up with subscriptions. I still haven't really kept up, but I've read more than I had in previous years.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I've been reading more of the backlist of the ones I already had through various challenges, like the Read the World Challenge, and Instagram is good for that. And then, mm-hmm. I've pulled all of the European focused ones too, so that I can try to knock those out this year. You know, I like to have these really broad goals so that I can still feel like I have choices. And then like we're finishing up a read along right now, which isn't really an official goal, but always is kind of in the back of my mind, and started planning for the fall read along. So I think that one's going to be a vote. And so if you're not part of the Goodreads group for Reading Envy readers, you should join, because we're going to choose between books like something by Sarah, Sarah Waters. Is that her name?
Yeah, that name sounds familiar.
Yeah, I haven't decided which book to go with. So it might be that book or Possession by A.S. Byatt, or there's a few more that people have mentioned. So I try to pick like a mighty tome that isn't brand new that people might want others to read along with them. So we'll see.
Did you have any reading goals for your class that you teach?
Well, I give them reading challenges and I've been kind of playing along. So like they have to read a book that's in a genre they don't usually read. And so like for my version of that, I've been reading Stacey Abrams' legal thriller.
Okay.
I'm going to look up the name here. It's called While Justice Sleeps. And that's like brand new. They have to read a book that's by and about someone different from them, and they can go in any direction. And I do that all the time, so that's not a problem. They have to read a book club book. This year, they're choosing between Convenience Store Woman, Steve in Florida, and The Subtweet.
The Subtweet. Is that the one you've talked about
a few times? I think I've talked about all of those because they're books that kind of stick with me. And the characters are college student aged, so I thought that would be good for them. They're all undergrads. Right. What is the four? Oh, I literally give them an assignment that they have to read a book that they've been wanting to read. And they're like, as an assignment? I'm like, yes. Because the whole point is to like get reconnected back to who you were when you read for fun, if you ever did. There's a few people in my class that never have, and so they're discovering what they like. And we just had this audiobook stay where we did different things with audiobooks, and it's fun. And this next week will be book club day and banned books day, and it's like all my favorite things.
That sounds great.
At the end of the class, they have to turn in reviews of the books that they've read, but then they also have to leave with a to-be-read list.
Nice.
Start them in on their addictions, you know?
Right.
Yeah, it's really fun. I would
have loved to have taken something like that.
Yeah. Did you read when you were in college?
I did. So when I was younger, my mom got rid of cable because, one, we were poor, and two, I watched a ton of it. And so then that's when I started reading. And even when my mom got cable again, I never really went back to watching TV. But then my husband and I got together, and all of a sudden I was watching so much TV when I was in college. It was ridiculous. And so I didn't read nearly as much.
Yeah.
But I'm back to reading a lot again. Okay. I had a baby last year, so when I read changes, but I still managed to read about the same amount.
So that must have been after our last podcast together.
Yeah. So we podcasted or spoke, whatever, in January.
Uh-huh.
And I had my baby in March, like right when the pandemic was starting.
Oof.
Yeah. That was fun. I don't recommend it.
Yeah.
For anyone listening, don't do it.
No more pandemics.
Don't have a baby when there's a pandemic.
Well, I guess we should talk about the books that we've been reading then. Would you like to go first?
Yeah. So one of the books that I literally just finished, I'm reading it for one of my book clubs I'm in. I talked about this book last time. It's Strange Book Club is probably the best term. But it's called A Dirty Job by Christopher Moore. So Christopher Moore, he writes what I would call like dark or black comedy with some absurdism in there too. And what this book is about is a guy named Charlie Asher, who in like the very first chapter, like the first five pages, his wife is in labor and then dies, leaving him with his little girl. But when he walks in, he sees a strange man, a tall, like 7 foot tall black man in a mint green suit. And then he freaks out thinking this guy killed his wife. And when he goes to like report this to the hospital, whatever, the guy's nowhere on the footage. And so that in itself isn't a big mystery. You find out a few chapters later what's going on. But the biggest plot of the main plot of the book is Charlie Asher is what's called a death merchant. And when he saw the guy in the mint green suit, also known as Minty Fresh, that's his name, Minty Fresh. He became this death merchant and he didn't know about it until a few months later. But death merchants, they are kind, they're not grim reapers. They don't directly kill anybody, but they transport souls. So in this world, when somebody dies, their soul goes into like a loved object, like a CD or something. And then the death merchants have to go get that object. And they're usually like secondhand stores. And then they sell it to the next person who needs it. And so that's the primary plot of the book. But as I mentioned earlier, Christopher Moore writes comedy. And so there's just a ton of like crazy, weird, absurd things that happen. Like his little daughter ends up getting what's called hellhounds. And they eat everything. So like there's scenes with the dad throwing them like car engines and they're just eating it. Later in the book, you get what's called the squirrel people, which are a bunch of little animals that were like sewn together, but they're wearing things like ball gowns and they're like running around holding like sporks. His daughter's babysitters are like a Russian woman and then a Chinese woman. And so like he does their dialogue, and I should say he kind of stereotypes them, but he stereotyping everyone in the book. It's not just the Russian and the Chinese woman. And, you know, he owns a secondhand store and one of his employees is named Ray. And he's always on the internet going to like Ukrainian girls loving you, aka ugly or desperate Filipinas. And then his other store employees, goth. And it's just, it's really, it really is funny. It's a little bit dirty though. So if you're put off by dirty humor, might not be for you, but overall it's just, it's hilarious.
So I have a question. Just trying to understand this death merchant thing. Is it that the people need to use the object or the soul?
Yeah. So what happens is he'll get like a name on his calendar, you know, Jessica Jones. He has to figure out who Jessica Jones is. So he'll like look at, you know, when people died, go to their house, and he looks for an object. Could be like a vase or whatever. It's glowing red, which tells him. And he takes it back to his shop. And then he just waits. And he, you know, people might come in. Someone looks at Jessica Jones' favorite pair of reading glasses, say, ooh, I like this, and they pick it up and buy it. And then the soul that's in the glasses will then get kind of transferred into the customer.
And they know it's happening?
They don't know what's happening.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they don't know what's happening. And this is in San Francisco, I should clarify. This is in our world in San Francisco. Another big part of the plot, which I failed to mention, is that there are these things called... They're Morrigan from Irish mythology, but he calls them sewer harpies because he doesn't know what they are. But they're basically harpies or crows, whatever, that are living in the sewers. And they want to get these souls because then they get stronger. And then if things get out of whack, darkness takes over. So he'll just be like walking along, minding his own business. And they'll be like talking shit to him out of the sewers. Because like he gets into fights with them and all kinds of crazy things, and they call him New Meat. And he's like, at one point he tries throwing firecrackers down into the sewers, and a police officer is like, what are you doing? And he's just, you know, the whole time talking shit to these like bird women that no one else can see.
So most of the people that live in San Francisco don't know about this whole
It's
like alternative universe world thing.
It's just the death merchants, and there's a bunch of them. Like, it's not just him. There's a bunch, like Minty Fresh, the guy that you see at the beginning. He's a death merchant who does mostly CDs. There's like a bookstore once. He does mostly clothes. And they don't really ever interact because they're worried about calling up the forces of darkness. Yeah. AKA the sewer harpies.
It's funny. I know this author from The Gospel According to Lamb.
Oh, that's right? Such a good book. Yes.
I don't think I heard about this one.
Oh, it's so funny. I read two of his other books. The Sheer Red Fool, which is based off of the King Lear Shakespeare play, but it's based off from the fool's point of view. And then he wrote two sequels. One's called The Serpent of Venice, which is another two Shakespeare plays. He's one of my favorite authors. And his titles, like, he has The Island of the Sequin Love Nun, which talks about cargo cults. And cargo cults, for those who don't know, which I learned about reading this book, is in the Pacific Islands in Polynesia, that area. These guys, well, these soldiers would come, like, with their airplanes, you know, be like, hi, I'm appropriating your island for a base. And then they would maybe give the locals, like, food items or whatever. And then once World War II ended, they just kind of dipped out. But then all of these islanders would start worshiping them and like the stuff they brought. I'm not doing a good job explaining it. You'll just have to look it up yourself. Cargo cults, Google it. Anyway, so Island of the Sequin Love Nun, and then the Lust Lizard of Melancholy Cove. That's another one. And then the Stupidest Angel.
I didn't realize he'd written so many.
Oh, yeah. He's prolific. He has quite a bit. He's been writing since the 90s.
And if it's your sense of humor, then it really works for you.
Yeah. I do want to clarify, this is, you know, there is some dark humor, but there's also, you know, like I said, there's a guy named Ray who's going on Ukrainian Girls Loving You, aka Ugly. I enjoy it quite a bit.
Well, thanks. I'm going to move to my first book. It's called Sparrow Envy, Field Guide to Birds and Lesser Beasts by J. Drew Lanham. I feel like I had a vague awareness of this book, but I heard him on the On Being podcast talking to Krista Tippett and really enjoyed what he had to say. And so I went and bought this book because it's from a local publisher, Hub City. And I guess it's actually mostly a book of poetry, which is probably strange because I believe he's an ornithologist at Clemson University. I was making some assumptions that I hope are right. And so most of the works are poems and everything's about birds, kind of. And then there's a few lists in the back. There's a good glossary that's really helpful if you encounter a term that you don't understand. He covers most of them there. But it's interesting too, because it's very up to date. So he's also Black, which is important. And we all remember that story when the white lady in the park called the police on Christian Cooper. So a different guy, might be the other Black ornithologist, because he talks about going to a bird conference and there being two of them. There's a few poems that also kind of speak to that experience. And there's one that's about the racism that's embedded in some bird names. There's one that talks about being the only other Black bird person at a conference. I think I said that. There's one about, you know, one thing that bird people do is they like lists, they go find stuff based on lists. And there's one I won't read in its entirety because I feel like it's not really meant to be in my voice, if that makes sense. But he talks about how he can't focus on nature and birds because he's thinking about bodies that are violated by police or, you know, people who aren't listened to. And he doesn't want to just become one of the litany, you know, himself. And that's a very powerful poem. Some of my other favorites. Oh yeah, that one is called Lifeless List. He doesn't want to become a member of a litany of dread, which I thought, wow.
I am getting a master's in biology, which hopefully I will have done this year. And so after that whole incident with the black birder being profiled abuse, I don't know what you would want to call it, in Central Park. It actually spurred like a huge Black Birders Week, but there's also like Black Mammalogist Week, Entomologist.
I think that's wonderful.
Oh, I do too. I'm white, but I started following a bunch of them, and reading through their tweets really is eye-opening to a lot of things that, because when you think of racism, you're like, you know, like, okay, you know, there's people out there saying the N-word who are doing like violent acts, but then you never, like, you don't see the undertones of it really when you're white, at least.
Yeah.
And then it really highlights just some of the ridiculousness that even happens in academia with people of color.
Oh, yeah. Unfortunately. Some of my other favorites in here, one is called Love, but it's L-U-V. And here's a little stanza from it. Love is humid summer, lust crush, cicadas humming choir, leaf's first blush, fair dance to vermilion warblers, wandering by guiding star. And then there's one called On Finding Swamp Religion. And he just talks about being in the swamp and how different it is. And his last stanza is, my gospel this morning, nothing is as it was or will ever be again. Others come to worship. Peace be done. Amen. But there's a lot in here too, just about observations about birds and thinking about birds and the kind of demeanor I think you have to slow down and pay attention to little details like that. It all kind of comes out in these, which I really enjoy, because I feel like the most meditative books that I've been able to focus on and read are always nature-based in some ways. And so this fits with that. Surprising little element, because this is a pretty slim book. I was surprised that he talks about being a hunter as well. So like he observes and studies birds, but he hunts deer. And I was taken aback by that, honestly. It didn't fit with my view of his reverence for nature, I guess. So there are two poems in here that specifically talk about hunting and consuming deer. So fair warning, I guess. I think to him, it's all consistent, but it set me back just a little bit. I just finished it today, so I haven't really processed that yet, but I just thought I would say that. I mean, that's very Southern. I mean, there's a lot of hunters around here. We hear them during hunting season in the field behind our house, but it just surprised me for some reason. I don't know. I can't put it into words yet.
I know what you mean. I feel like a lot of times there's this idea that hunters are going to be people who don't necessarily care about the environment. Like for me, I personally associate hunting more with conservative politics. And unfortunately, in this day and age, a lot of conservative politics are not about protecting the environment, when traditionally conservative politics were actually really involved in it.
Right. And you hunt to keep the balance, kind of.
Yes. Yeah. So like in the case of deer, because we've removed wolves from most of the United States, as well as other predators, deers are now way overpopulated. So people hunt because they like hunting, but it's also good, at least in the case of the deer, because then deer also spread ticks. And what comes with ticks? Disease. And so by hunting deer, it does help reduce the amount of ticks being spread. Not necessarily always, because ticks also hitch rides on other prey animals like mice and rabbits and whatnot, but it does help mitigate it.
Yeah. It's interesting that I ended up talking to a biologist on my biology person.
I'm not into hunting, and I would hopefully one day become a vegetarian. Mm-hmm. But hunting and conservation and restoration actually go hand in hand, like logically.
Yeah.
It's just politics kind of warps it, I think.
So he's talking about being in a blind and how that also lets him be invisible to the birds. Mm-hmm. In a sense. And so maybe the two just go together. I mean,
yeah. And you know, hunters and fishers, buying the license actually is what funds a lot of state and county parks, and people's jobs like are because of hunting license, land managers. There's a big discussion in conservation biology about more hunting of rare, endangered, uncommon species. There's a kind of sheep or goat, something along those lines here in the States. And it's been suggested that we let one or two people bag one of these animals, because then you can sell it. Like, you know, you sell the one license for, I don't know, 10,000, whatever. And then you can take that money and put it back into conservation. And you have that one hunter gets that one sheep. And it's like a way to help control poaching while also giving money back to conservation. And there's been talk about doing that with like rhinos and elephants. There's a guy in Africa, I think South Africa, who has a bunch of rhinos, but he saws off all their ivory. Don't get me wrong, it sucks, but then he stockpiles it for if ivory ever becomes legal again. So he's protecting these rhinos from poachers, but he's sawing off their ivory.
Yeah, it sounds like a complicated issue that I have not really considered.
It's very complicated. And I personally don't have an opinion one way or the other because I don't know enough. I really don't know enough about the topics to say, yes, they should allow this kind of hunting or no. This is a topic I could go all day on.
No, I'm interested in it. Honestly, I think it's good. And what I really like about this book is that it's not the science side of it. I mean, no offense, but it's like the reflections of someone who knows a lot about science.
Right.
Put in more poetic terms. And I think that's such an interesting approach and an unexpected approach that I think that's what really made me enjoy it.
There's been a lot of really good stuff about like wildlife and other biologists writing books, and some of it is more poetic or more creative nonfiction. I think that might be the appropriate term.
I think one of the times Jason Roland, who hasn't been on the podcast for a few years, but I think he talked about his earlier book called The Home Place, which I think is about, I'm remembering right,
Memoirs of a Colored Man's Land.
Yeah.
Love Affair, I mean.
That was back on episode 104. So I'll link to that one just because I think that's a connection I forgot about that book had been on here. So
yeah, if you are interested in minority experiences with nature, because I don't know about you, but honestly, even as a person involved in wildlife and nature, whenever I think of people enjoying outdoors, like a wildlife person, I always think of a white man. So I like hearing and learning more about others, people like minorities experience. And the Ologies podcast with Allie Ward, she really makes sure that she has voices from all over the place. And like she recently had a podcast with the Black Forager, who goes by Black Forager. So if you do like learning about other people's experience with nature, I would honestly recommend checking out her podcast.
And you said it's called Ologies?
Yep.
Okay. I thought you were going to recommend a book that just came out this year called We Are Each Other's Harvest.
Oh.
It's all about Black farmers in America by Natalie Bastille, who wrote that novel Queen Sugar.
Oh, yes.
I heard about it during ALA Midwinter, and I haven't read it yet, but I'm super excited about reading it. I have family members that are farmers. Like my uncle was a pig farmer. My family's all very white, but I grew up in an area that was 25% Hispanic. And so lots of farm workers, and then people who would kind of move up from farm worker to owning their own farms and stuff like that. Yeah, it's such a different thing to actually look at who's doing the work.
It really is.
Well, let's move on to your next book because it's kind of related in some ways.
Yeah, both of them actually are. So the next one we talk about is called Unbowed with Wenjerry Mahathai. I hope I pronounced that right. I looked it up a few times, but you know. And so this is a autobiography or a memoir, however you want to label it, about Dr. Wenjerry Mahathai. She's not a medical doctor. She received her doctorate in something to do with biology. I can't remember what the exact field was. There's so many subfields. And she is from Kenya. She was born, I think, in the 1940s or 50s. And Kenya was, unfortunately, one of the places that was colonized in Africa. I think it was primarily by the British. And so you start off with her being a young girl and kind of learning how the British had impacted the country's land. So a lot of Kenya is forested. And what often happens when you have colonizers is they say, I don't like this. Let's plant some plants that don't actually belong here. And so by doing that, they British people planted, encouraged like tea trees and other things. They tore down all the forests. And then when you tear down all the forests, you get all these other kind of issues. Like you get soil erosion, you get issues with water, people who depend on the forests for either food or firewood, they no longer have that source. And so it's talking about from her being a young girl and seeing all this in her exploration of nature to, I think about 2000, 2006, and her trying to restore the land. I mentioned she did get a doctorate, and this was in the United States. No, she got a bachelor's in the U.S., and then she finished her doctorate in Kenya and then did some of it in Germany. And she started the Green Belt Movement in the 60s and 70s, which was working with Kenyan women primarily to establish these tree nurseries and then to replant these trees around Kenya to help reforest the area. And this goes back to how a lot of colonized countries have women who are taking on a good portion of like the day-to-day labor, the pink labor, without being compensated for it. And so by involving these women, she's empowering them because she gives them money for like every seedling that they can raise, as well as improving their homes and their livelihood. She did this for years and years. She won the Nobel Peace Prize in the early 2000s, and she expanded her efforts to include more than just tree planting. She also did a fast or a hunger strike for a woman whose sons have been taken unjustly by the government. She became involved in government politics and was like just worked really, really hard to try to restore a lot of the forest to Kenya. And by restoring the forest, it helps alleviate all of your soil erosion and all these other issues.
I was just thinking about when I read this book, I found it very moving in ways that are hard to explain. It's just like how much difference one person can have, you know, just in a broader sense. It's really, I mean, I felt like it was really about that too. Like
I connected deeply with her, not because I have done anything amazingly like that, but I am very involved in conservation and just environmental sciences.
Mm-hmm.
And so reading about this amazing woman, I have a privileged background compared to her, you know, like the police showed up and like she went to jail several times because she was just trying to plant trees. And, you know, she did all these protests and the big city in Kenya, which I'm forgetting the name of.
Nairobi.
Thank you. They wanted to put like this giant condominium or whatever, this giant developed building right in the middle of one of the city's few green spaces. And she worked so hard to not have that happen. She is truly an inspiration. She is an amazing woman. She's one of my heroes now. And I hope I could be half as amazing as her.
Yeah, she really accomplished quite a bit. It looks like there's even some movements in the States that have branched off from her work, which is so cool.
It really is. She did receive some outside help, like for funding, but she still the one who is doing. She was still the one finding the woman, locating the woman, saying, hey, I'll give you money if you do this. She was the one making all the connections that all their fig trees were torn up. And so now they were losing soil and they were losing water. I can't describe how I feel about this woman in this book. Unfortunately, she has died.
Yeah.
She was extraordinary.
I agree. I feel like more people should read this book. I'm so glad you picked it for one of your memoirs to read.
So I forgot I was going to bring this up. So my library actually has, like, you can give them something you want to read, like a topic, like a genre, name some books that you've liked, and then maybe put other comments like, I'm not comfortable with animal abuse. I've read these books, and then they'll give you a list. And this was on this list along with The Woman with Seven Names. So I got those. I'll probably get the others. I forgot what they were.
There was an episode not too long ago where I talked about a similar program at my library, and I'm about where you are. I got five great book recommendations. I've read two of them so far. So I need to go back to that list and remember what else is on there.
Yeah. They've gave me a couple I've already read. That's nice. Like, I don't have to worry about reading those. Honestly, I just asked for memoirs because the memoirs, biographies I like to read, and I mentioned this last time, are like scientists, you know, people who had a really big impact, historical figures, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't even ask for all women, but all the women, they gave me all women, which I think is really nice. Yeah.
Well, in my library, they had a notes field, so I sent them to my Goodreads so that they would give me books I hadn't read.
Nice.
I thought that was helpful.
Yeah. I should say, Dr. Mati, I think she's a little bit of an AIDS denier. So if there's anyone listening, I know I looked it up, but she did all these amazing things. So,
well, and it seemed like I was kind of skimming through the Wikipedia about it, like not so much that denying AIDS, but where it came from.
Yeah. Honestly, I think she might think it was purposely introduced, which I don't really believe that. But given what we, as in people in power, have done to those not in power involving medicine, I don't blame her.
Well, I think from her perspective, I mean, I know there's this whole middle generation missing in many African countries because mm-hmm. of AIDS. I know people who are missionaries in Nairobi and they've adopted like 4 kids, and there's so many kids that don't have parents anymore. And so if they don't have grandparents to care for them, it's a really big problem.
Yeah.
And it's amazing how one disease can do that, you know, just like.
Yeah, it really is. I'll just leave it at that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to move to my next book.
Sounds with good.
All the previous content warnings. It is My Dark Vanessa by Kate Elizabeth Russell. And I need to look it up really quick because I listened to the audio. And so I always want to make sure that I credit the narrator. It's narrated by Grace Gummer, who does an excellent job. I was not going to read this book. I've never read Lolita. I don't like books about people abusing children. I mean, arguably nobody likes them. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I was looking through my Hoopla one day. The cover is so striking. It had such great ratings. I was like, fine, I'll try it. I might not like it. And I ended up thinking it was just incredible. So it's the story of this girl, Vanessa. She gets sent to boarding school. I mean, it's a boarding school she wants to be at. She wants, you know, mm-hmm. to have like a competitive environment. She wants to go to a good college. Her teacher grooms her, and they end up in a relationship that is against the rules. And the brilliant thing about the book is that you see it from her perspective. So it's not from his perspective, which I feel like a lot of 20th century male novels were all about these men, these male professors having midlife crises. And, you know, it's like this like standard story every man or male right. writer would write. So it's different from that because it's from her perspective and she doesn't have that context, right? Mm-hmm. So everything that's happening to her, which I think the reader can see, somehow the author is able to show you that this is not the first time this has happened. Or it's unlikely that it is because he knows exactly what he's doing. He isolates mm-hmm. her from her friends. He gives her books that have suggestive content. He tests her out in different ways. Like he touches her knee at the same time that others are in the classroom and sees how she responds. You know, he tells her how special she is, mm-hmm. all these things. Well, in her mind, she is the mature, important, special student who he just can't help himself around because that's how special she is, right? Mm-hmm. She takes and believes the entire story exactly the way he wants her to believe it. And you know she's wrong. And you know that he's not a good person. But you, like, as the reader, you can do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it's so fascinating. And there's all these other people that can see it, like the counselor, the person who's in charge of her residence, people like poke at her a lot and ask her like, what's going on with you? Trying to open the door for her to confess it. But, you know, she's keeping it private. She even sneaks out to be with him at his house. Ugh,
oh, awful. No.
And her parents don't do enough. And then it clearly goes downhill from there. But I just think that the writing is so brilliant. Like it just, it's kind of how I felt when I finished A Little Life by Hanya Yanagihara. Now that book is very long and arguably needed some editing, but I couldn't decide for a while. Every time I read any novel by her, any both of her novels made me feel this way. The other one is called The People in the Trees.
I honestly loved that book.
Yeah, but it's like, do I give her a high rating because I hate her now? Because the person in that book is terrible.
That's based off of a person.
Yeah. Well, and I think ultimately being able to portray someone so effectively means that you have a really good writer. And I think that's where I end up landing. But for a while, it's just like, wow, like the darkness of this content is, you know, hard to take. And I would say that this is right along those lines. But I wouldn't say it's glorifying it. Not at all. Not like Lolita probably does. I think it's actually showing what we're up against if we have teenage girls under our care at all. And like what matters to them is not the same as what matters to the rest of us. It's such a stage of their development too. It's like completely natural to start keeping secrets mm-hmm. and to start forming their own identities. And so you don't want to violate that in the context of making sure that they're safe. But it's not like I read it as a parenting manual. I did not. But it has that kind of sense to it because you can see it from this wider perspective. And that's intentional. I just thought that that was just so incredible. And I just haven't stopped thinking about it. I probably read it. I think I checked with you about a few weeks ago. Like, should I talk about this book? I think the reason it's even on my radar at all is because it was on the long list, but not the short list for the tournament of books. And so it's not really a reading goal of mine. I'm probably never going to be able to finish the whole list any year, but it's kind of like a secret goal of mine. Like I want to be a completist because it's usually a great list of books, you know? And so slowly and every once in a while, I'll pull another one out and read it. The funny thing is like a month or so ago, I read Exhalation by Ted Chiang. Mm-hmm. And I was so excited. I was going to cross another one off, but it was from last year's list. Oh. I was like, oh. But I still pulled that planner out and I crossed it off feel like, you know, I did it. Anyway, there's not a lot much more to say about this one. Like part of it's the journey of the book. Like I wouldn't want to tell you like all the details that happen. I found it entirely compelling. And I know that this book had some controversy when it came out. Like someone had a memoir that felt like her experience was being overshadowed or something. But honestly, this is something that happens a lot. I don't think it's that unique of an experience. I mean, unfortunately, like I know people that this happened to, so I don't think the author stole anything. I didn't get that impression. It was just one of those weird author implosions that happened surrounding this. But I don't think I would pay attention to that. One thing that's interesting is that it follows her into her adulthood. And so the sections, as you're listening to them, they go back and forth between her adult years and her teen years. And so you actually get the perspective of the long-term kind of ramifications. And it's about someone who doesn't report. So I think in our world right now with the hashtag Me Too movement and everything, there's a lot of, not necessarily pressure, but it feels like it's clearer to report. And I'm glad when people do. She's chosen not to. And so people call her on it in an interesting way, which I think is a really interesting story and probably one that happens. And so it was kind of a different take in that sense. I also just wanted to say that there's an interview at the end of the Hoopla audiobook version with the narrator, and she talks about her process, and I found this fascinating. They recorded the chapters in the order of the age, so like the linear, they reorganized them to be in a linear fashion so that she could work on the nuance in the voice differences between the teen version and the adult version. And you can hear it in the book. Like she's very effectively moving between two stages of this person's life, which I don't even know how you do that. But I just thought that was so smart because she got to like let it happen naturally instead of having to try to put herself back into something.
Yeah, no, that is like, I guess, clever, interesting.
Yeah.
I really don't ever listen to audiobooks. So that's not something I ever even would have considered.
Yeah. And I think I probably enjoyed the audiobook more than I would have just enjoyed reading the print because of how good it is. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to your last book.
Okay. So this is going back to our like theme of nature, and it's called The Voyage of the Narwhal by Andrea Barrett. And it's set in the, I think, mid 1800s, and is about a man named Erasmus Darwin Wells, calling back to Charles Darwin's grandfather, Erasmus. And he is joining an expedition to the Arctic Circle to find a ship that went missing. And so the story itself is fictional. There wasn't a voyage of the narwhal, but the ship they're looking for did actually go missing. It went missing in like 1915. The book, The Terror by Dan Simmons, is about it. The Franklin Expedition. And so the main character, Erasmus Wells, he is a naturalist. So he is a natural historian. And I can't remember, he studies, invertebrates, but I can't remember what his focus area is. I think it could be something like snails or beetles, something small and honestly insignificant to most people. And so he joins this expedition to try to find what happened to Franklin and his ship. Well, when you're in the Arctic and you're not prepared, bad things happen. And that's what happens here. They were on a whaling ship, and they were originally intending only to go for a summer to try to find Franklin's ship, and they ended up overwintering. And the main, like the captain, Zeke, he sucks, to be honest. Like, I was reading this book, and I was ready to mutiny against him. He forces all the men to stay, even though they don't want to. He has these, like, visions of grandeur, and he tries to pin the blame on everybody else, and there's this there are Eskimo tribes that they run into, and he just makes a fool of himself, and they eventually accumulates into him leaving, which is about halfway through the book, and then the later half of the book is more about the repercussions that Erasmus Wells has to deal with, the captain leaving. It also features viewpoints from some woman who they left behind in Philadelphia. They make nature plates for a publishing company owned by the family. So they do like the drawing and the artwork and things like that. And it's a really good book. I'm talking about it. I enjoyed it deeply. I felt like it did a great job covering issues you have with scientific exploration, but also what happens when your leader does not have the same goals as the rest of the crew.
Oof, yeah.
People die because you're in the Arctic when you honestly probably shouldn't be. And
do you think ships back then just planned to overwinter just in case? Because that seems like that would be, twice as much supplies that you would need.
I mean, if I was a ship, I would.
Yeah.
But so they were on a whaling ship with a whaling crew. So Zeke was doing like just in case, double the supplies. We might need them just in case. But in reality, his intention the whole time was to force them to overwinter. And this is like the Arctic Circle. So this is far north.
Well, and mutiny sounds like a good idea until you realize that the ship is where the supplies are.
Yeah. I don't know if you technically call it a mutiny, what they did, because he was gone.
Right. Because
he still wanted to try to find the expedition. And they're like, no, dude, we need to go home. This is August. We're not staying here another winter. We need to go home. And, you know, he just kind of like stormed off.
Yeah.
And then then they were like, well, we're leaving with the ship. Good luck.
Yeah.
Yeah. It kind of reminds me, there's a song by a band called Silverstein, and it's I can't believe I forgot the name, Shipwreck in the Sand. And I felt like those two things kind of tied in together, because that's about a ship that does result in a mutiny. Because the sailors are just over it.
I read in my goal of reading a book for every country and every place, you know, I read a book about Pitcairn Island, which the only reason people live there is because of a mutiny. And now it's this like crazy lawless place that New Zealand is in charge of.
Yeah. Was that Mutiny?
What was that book? It's not Mutiny on the Bounty, which is what, you know, everyone thinks of.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of. There's the This Week in History. Yeah. I mean, Stuff You Missed in History that recently had a topic about Mutiny on the Bounty.
I guess their society is so lawless, but New Zealand is in charge of it, that they won't allow people under 14 to even live there.
Oh, wow.
So if you have kids, you have to figure out somewhere else for them to go. Well, and here's a fun thing. There are cruise lines that stop there, but the island is so small and has such a small infrastructure that if they ever can even stop there, the island gets on the ship.
Oh, wow.
Because they can't sustain the people getting off the ship to come onto the island. The book I read is called Serpent in Paradise by Dia Burkett. And it just talks about the 38 islanders that live on this tiny rock. They have no cars, no doctor. And the funny thing is that I found this, I don't know if you've ever been to Powell's Books in Oregon.
No, I want to.
But I had gone to their travel section and they had this tiny shelf on the bottom called Oceania. And I was like, what's on this shelf? And I just bought everything I didn't recognize because a bookstore like that like has everything. And so
right.
I feel like I'm the only person I know who's read it, but fascinating just the same. But yeah, I thought it was so funny that the whole reason is those people who mutinied off the Bounty.
Right.
Ended up here.
I read it a few months ago. I've been in a bit of a reading slump and I was like, well, I like this book a lot. I really enjoy fiction books about scientists.
Yeah.
And she just did a wonderful job. I felt like capturing what it would be like to be on this expedition, trying to find a guy who went missing, you know, 20, 30 years ago. But at the same time, you're also trying to learn more about that world. Because at the time, and even still now, the Arctic Circle, a lot of that, the wildlife, the ecology, that's not really known to science, to Western man. I mean, Honestly, it's known to the people, like the tribes that live there.
It's a very rich system.
Right. And there's just a ton that we don't know. So just thinking about that. And then you have to deal with, you know, it's 1815. Like, we don't even think germs are a thing yet. Or 1850. We don't even know about germs. So trying to juggling all that, she did a really good job.
Yeah, it sounds great.
Yeah. And I really hate Zeke. Like,
yeah.
he was supposed to be this, you know, charismatic guy. But you were like, I was just ready to be like, viva la revolution. Like,
yeah. Well, I hope that you find your way out of a reading slump soon. Is there anything that you're looking forward to reading next or that you've started?
So I'm actually reading The Liar's Dictionary right now. I picked it up when you talked about it. Mm-hmm. I nearly DNF'd it because the writing isn't necessarily for me. But I decided to give another shot and I'm still liking it.
I've heard very mixed responses to that one. So you shouldn't feel bad if it's not for you.
Right. And then, so the sequel to Dirty Job is Secondhand Souls. So I'll probably be starting that here tonight. And then I have, for my other book club, I'm in another one where we try to read primarily female authors. Usually somewhere involving like science or science fiction. Because we're all biologists. The fourth Becky Chambers book, we read the first three, and we're going to read the fourth. The Galaxy and the Ground Within. So I'll be reading that shortly. I started Prisoners of Geography a minute ago, but I haven't picked it up in a while. So I'm going to try to get back to that.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you ever want a science adjacent list, I keep a book list in Goodreads of anthropology novels because that's what I really like.
You should read A Natural History of Dragons. I talked about it last time.
You did, yeah. I still haven't read that one, but I want to.
Marie Brennan, she has, like, she's getting the PhD in anthropology, and you can tell.
Hmm.
Like, you cannot really tell that she knows about anthropology.
Gotta love that. Mm-hmm. Well, and I've already kind of said, but I'm working on reading right now. Still reading Braiding Sweetgrass and then While Justice Sleeps by Stacey Abrams, narrated by Aidan Relly. Oh ho.
Braiding Sweetgrass. I want to read that. That's on my list.
I think you'd really like it.
Yeah.
It's so beautiful. It's so beautiful.
Yeah. And there's been a big movement in ecology lately, or at least as far as I can tell, you know, my circle of friends to try to actually like incorporate, respect, honor, involve the Native American community in land managing and ecology type things and like working with them.
That would be nice.
Yeah. So it'd be nice to learn more about that area.
There's another, it's more like a reference book that I read earlier last year, maybe, called Iwagaru. And it just has entries on specific plants, but from that perspective, I thought that was really neat too.
That does sound really neat.
Very well illustrated.
Ugh, I love looking at natural historian illustrations.
Yeah.
Like Victorian era. I really want to get a couple friends who are involved in the ecology biology field some prints of like a coyote or a butterfly.
Oh yeah.
That are done. Those would be such style.
Those would be great tattoos too.
Yeah, I study bees and I want to get a bee done in that style.
You should. That would be beautiful. You read The Food Explorer?
No, but it sounds great.
My book club read that because we read about half nonfiction, half fiction. Mm-hmm. And it's all about this guy. I think the author's name is Daniel. I can't remember the name of the historic figure, but he traveled around and like he's responsible for so many things like avocados.
Oh, avocados.
And it was so fascinating. And I think we had no idea how few of the plants and foods that we eat actually are native to our country. It was really amazing. Really.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Dandelions aren't native, fun fact, but they're important. So you should let them be on your lawn. Yeah. You can make like dandelion honey, wine. Like you can make all kinds of things from dandelions too.
Salad.
Yep. I will go pick some and give them to my lizards because they can eat them.
Oh, yeah. I bet the bees like them too, huh?
They do. And clover. Dandelion's my favorite plant, even though it's not native. It's not invasive, though, so.
Yeah.
That's fine.
But they spread well because of the seeds.
Oh, yeah. They spread really well. And so in disturbed areas. So disturbed would be like our lawns, sides of the roads. But if you're looking at a prairie or a stored prairie or something, they don't hold too well, which is good because they're not native. Like I said, they're good for the bees. I feel so bad when I see bees and butterflies and other insects in urban areas that don't really have flowers. Because to them, it's like, it's a food desert. That's what it is.
Yeah, totally. We get a lot of both in our yard because we have a hibiscus and blueberries and a lime tree. Oh. And they like those plants.
They'll give them kisses for me.
We have six, I think, I can't remember what they're called, but they're black and yellow butterflies that live in our yard.
Yeah, I planted some flowers recently. I want to start like a food garden, but I got so much else on my plate. But I just feel bad. I feel so bad. So I went and I got a garden box and I put some soil in it and I bought a bunch of seeds. And I'm like, have fun. I don't know what I'm doing, but I hope you have fun.
Well, and I saw something that like if you have a bird bath, you can put a stone in it so the bees have somewhere to sit.
Yep. They'll drink out of there.
We should take care of them. This has been a great conversation for caring about nature, I think.
Yep.
Well, thank you, Courtney, for coming on the podcast. I always enjoy talking to you.
Yeah, thank you. I'm glad I was able to come.
Thanks for listening to the Reading Envy podcast. You can follow me on Twitter at Reading Envy or find a complete listing of our podcast episodes as well as all of the books discussed on today's episode at readingenvy.com.